Hello and welcome to the World Schools Podcast, a production of the USA's National Speech and Debate Association and the World Debate Institute at the University of Vermont. My name is Alfred Snyder. They also call me Tuna, and I will be your host for this program. The World Schools Podcast is for students and teachers who are interested in the World Schools debating format, the most international debate format on the planet. It is accessible, challenging, educational, and fun. Join us as we explore how to debate in this format, as well as share news about competitions and conversations with those involved. Well, here we go. Here's what's coming up on this week's show. We're going to hear a brief introduction to this exciting debate format, so you just get a general idea of what it's all about. We're going to hear from J. Scott One, Executive Director of the National Speech and Debate Association, about why the organization has made such a commitment to the World Schools debating format. We're going to hear from Cindy Timmons, who's one of the coaches for USA Debate and current team manager, and also has been a host for the largest academic competition in the world. We're going to hear from Nick Angelopoulos from California, who has twice attended the World Schools Debating Championship representing the USA. And finally, we're going to hear from Dr. Steve Yano of St. John's University in New York City, who is a podcast and World Schools Debate format pioneer. Let's start by giving you a brief description of the World Schools debating format. And it's the one that's used in tournaments around the world, and specifically at the World Schools Debating Championship, where each country sends one team and they debate for the world title. Well, in a World Schools debate, there are two teams, the proposition and the opposition. There are three people on each team. Topics are called motions. So for most tournaments, one half are prepared motions, and the students get them weeks before the tournament, and they prep together along with their coaches. The other half of the motions are impromptu motions. Students receive them 60 minutes before the debate. They can only prep with their teammates, not with their coaches. They cannot use the internet. They cannot bring in any background files, just a dictionary, and an almanac. Each team gives 3 8-minute speeches, alternating with the proposition team going first. Each team then, after that, gives a 4-minute summary speech with the opposition going first, and that speech summarizes the debate and introduces no new issues. During the 6 8-minute speeches, the other team can offer what are called points of information to the speaker during their middle 6 minutes of the speech. It's up to the speaker to accept or decline those points, but each speaker should accept 2 points. The person offering the point of information has 15 seconds to ask a question or make a statement, after which the speaker will respond. There is no preparation time between speeches, and students should speak when called on by the judge. After the debate, the students shake hands and leave the room. Judges will then bring them back when it's time for the decision. Here are some basic expectations about World Schools debate. First, proposition teams are expected to debate the whole motion, not try to narrow it, not try to run away from the issues of the motion. Second, motions cannot be place set or time set, and they're expected to be applied globally. That's right, World Schools debate takes a motion and applies it to the world. Third, the focus of the debate should be the issues of the motion, not procedural arguments. If there's going to be a definitional challenge, it should be done according to the rules, but it almost never happens. Fourth, arguments can be supported by various sorts of evidence, but there is no reading of cards as you might see in some American formats. 5. The debate should be accessible to the average intelligent citizen, and it should not be aimed at debate experts. 6. Delivery should be at the speed of public discourse, not rapid-fire delivery. 7. Debaters cannot use laptops or tablets during the debate. The National Speech and Debate Association wants to follow the example set by international teams at the World Schools Debating Championship and endeavors to follow the rules for that contest. Full rules can be found at the National Speech and Debate Association website. It's pretty simple. It's all about the issues, World Schools Debate. We reached Scott One, who's the Executive Secretary of the National Speech and Debate Association, to talk to him about World Schools Debate. I'm here now with the Executive Secretary of the National Speech and Debate Association, J. Scott One, who's out there on the road, and we've reached him by telephone. Hi, Scott.
Good morning, Tuna. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks a lot for sparing some time. You got some budget duties, huh?
Yes, it's that annual thing that must be done.
Okay. Now, that can be quite a task because, and I think some people don't necessarily understand that the National Speech and Debate Association in the U.S. is really a very old and large organization. And other countries may not have this kind of tradition or this kind of elaborate network. Can you describe the National Speech and Debate Association for us briefly? I'm sure you could talk for hours about it, but...
Absolutely. Well, as you mentioned, the association was founded in 1925, and from its beginning, its mission has been to honor and recognize outstanding performance and contribution in speech and debate education, and to advance the cause of students having access to the activity. And over the past 90 years, it has grown into the world's largest organization that sponsors speech and debate and hosts the world's largest academic competition in the national tournament. We have almost 200,000 active student members annually from 3,500 high schools and over 1,000 middle schools, and we have about 9,000 educators that are helping our cause and our mission within the organization.
Wow, great. Great. So, and you do debate outreach activities as well, right? Speech and debate.
Absolutely. Speech and debate.
Okay. And could you just tell us a little bit about why the National Speech and Debate Association has made such a commitment to the World Schools Debate format?
Well, there's several reasons, Tuna. I mean, the first is that the rest of the world is really embracing the World Schools Debate format. And we quickly discovered that if we want the students in the United States to have more opportunity and some of the best opportunities to exchange and compete on a global level, then our students needed to be exposed to the type of event style that is has become predominant around the world, and that's World Schools Debate style. The other major reason that we've embraced it is we believe that it is a really good style for both education of argumentation and critical thinking skills, but also the enhancement of the life skills of the young people that are working within our association and within the activity in the U.S. We believe that World Schools Debate does promote and enhance those 21st century skills that our students need. So it was kind of an easy decision once we joined the fold and realized how predominant the event is.
So what are some of the things that the National Speech and Debate Association is doing to promote the World Schools Debate format in America?
Well, there's several things. Probably the number one primary thing that we started a couple years ago is we host a major event in June, and I believe that our World Schools event last year was the largest tournament ever held in the format with over 118 teams. And so one of the first things we've done is decided that we are going to host this very large event and invite students from all over the world to participate. We can talk about that in a minute, I'm sure. But so one thing we've done is to promote this event. And then secondly, we've really started to promote it and enhance it at the local level with regular season tournaments in the United States. And now we're increasing the amount of resources that we have available through the association to help those schools that are interested in building upon the World Schools Debate format.
So, Scott, if the association is increasing resources for teaching students about World Schools Debate, is that only available to USA students and teachers, or will it be more broadly available?
It's more broadly available. We a substantial amount of the resources that we provide as an organization are absolutely free to the rest of the world and throughout the U.S. because our, you know, as I said earlier, our number one goal is to promote the activity and expand the opportunities for young people. We are a membership organization, so there are certain resources that are available directly to our members. The good news about that, too, is our membership is not restricted to the United States. And, you know, any country or any school can get directly involved in the association and have access to absolutely everything that we provide.
Scott, we've just finished the selection for the USA debate team for the next year, the World Schools Debating Championship in Stuttgart. Can you tell us a little bit about that process?
Well, first of all, it was a very difficult process in one way and a very easy process in another. We had several hundred students in the United States apply to be part of the team. And that wasn't too surprising considering the fantastic job the previous teams have done in promoting USA Debate and the recent success that they've had. I think a number of students around the country are very interested in the opportunity of global communication and representing their country. So we started, the process started off with several hundred applicants, and then through a series of web-based interviews, applications, letters of recommendation, and various impromptu exercises, the committee was able to narrow the field down to the 9 students that will be participating, and that whole process took well over a month to get down to the 9 that will be participating this year as members of USA Debate. The reason that it was easy, Tuna, in many ways, is any of those multiple hundreds of students that applied really could have made up the group of 9 and had the skills necessary to really excel as members of USA Debate. So we knew, and I think you'd agree as someone that was in on that process, we knew that it was very difficult to make a wrong decision. It's tough, it's challenging to narrow such an incredible field down to 9, but we had an outstanding field of young people to choose from, which in many ways, you know, when you're guaranteed to make a pretty good choice, that also makes it a little easier.
So in June in Salt Lake City, we're going to have this U.S. World Schools Debate Invitational again. And what would you say to schools around the world? Are they welcome? How can they get involved? What's it going to be like?
They're more than welcome. They're encouraged. The event would never be what it is if international programs or groups of students and coaches did not participate in the event. The event is designed to do two things. It's designed to welcome several hundred U.S. speakers and debaters together in this format to grow and advance in the exposure and education of the format. And secondly, it's designed as a global communication tool where programs from other countries can come and experience USA debating in the format that they're used to debating it. So we have a very specific and structured judge training program with outstanding educators from the global community to ensure that the judging will be of high quality and meeting the standards of World Schools Debate that students are used to and coaches are used to. But at the same time, students from other countries that are coming get exposed to over 500 U.S. speakers and debaters that have been trained in argumentation and critical thinking in a very specific style to our country. And we're very proud of that quality of argumentation and critical thinking. It also is an incredible opportunity for students to debate in front of native English speaking students, which can always be beneficial when trying to advance your ability in the format, since the format does take place as an English-speaking format. So we feel like for all those reasons, it's a really, really great opportunity for countries that would like to participate. And as I kind of alluded to, whether you are a national team program or you are just a supervisor and a group of students from a country that would like to participate, we encourage both of those groups to apply for an invitation. Now, if we have limits on entries, we will give priority to national teams. However, we want representation from as many countries as possible, so we really would like students and their supervising adults to really consider it, even if they're not a part of the nationals team.
And will you help people get visas if they need them?
We will do everything we possibly can to ensure that visas are acquired.
And I understand that nobody you've sponsored for a visa has ever been denied one.
That's absolutely true.
Okay, and the national tournament, I think, really does a good job at making it a really fun time. What kind of things happen that make it fun?
Well, first of all, anytime you put 5,000 middle school and high school students in one location, it's going to be fun. Just the atmosphere surrounding. This is the ultimate championship for U.S. speakers and debaters. The award ceremony is our Academy Awards, so to speak, of award giving. And we do other things throughout the week that make it very exciting. We have several opportunities for student gatherings on Tuesday night. We have a huge student party where students get the opportunity to interact with students from all over the country and all over the world. And then just throughout the week, there are several opportunities in the evening to connect and reconnect. And like I said, anytime you have a set of final rounds of all of the events, including the World Schools Invitational final round in front of nearly 4,000 people, that's an electric atmosphere that just makes it very exciting.
Well, I'm sure in future podcasts we'll talk more about that tournament and give people specific information. And I want to ask you if you'll come back at some point later on and talk to us more as the podcast continues.
Absolutely. I appreciate the invite. I have seen the lineup of individuals that are to follow me, and having me on pales in comparison to some of the individuals that you're going to have on in the future. I'm so excited to follow the podcast myself. I can't wait. I know you have the Coaches USA Debate and the new USA Debate team members jumping on at some point, and I'm sure you have members of the world community popping on, and I just think it'll be a wonderful thing to watch tonight. I want to thank you for bringing this podcast to life and everything that it's sure to do for the community.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Scott. Have a great day struggling with the budget, and we'll see you later.
You got it. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Our apologies for the audio quality there, but Scott was on his way into a budget meeting, and we just wanted to reach him while he was available because we need to hear from him. We'll be working on that. And now we're going to hear from Cindy Timmons, who has a lot of experience both with World Schools Debate and with speech and debate in America. Okay, I'm joined here now by Cindy Timmons, who is a coach for USA Debate and also has the arduous task of being team manager, which can be challenging when you have a country as big as we have. So welcome, Cindy. Thanks for dropping in.
Thank you for having me.
I know that you have been with the project of USA trying to spread the good news of World Schools Debate since the beginning, and I just want to thank you for all your hard work.
Well, it's been a privilege. Thank you very much.
Okay. Now, you have quite a long background in speech and debate in America. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yes, I actually started debate when I was 14, back in junior high school in Texas. I started as a policy debater. At that time, that was the only format we had, and then did public speaking as well. But in terms of debate, judged through college, then started coaching when I began my teaching career. So we're looking at 40 years now plus of working with all the different American formats of debate.
And you've also been very active in the National Speech and Debate Association.
Yes, from the dozens and dozens of years of attending the national tournament as a coach to hosting now three different national tournaments with a fourth one coming along in 2019. I'm very involved in the national organization. I'm very proud of the work they've done with coach education and diversity initiatives and the resources that they provide our very diverse country with all the different public speaking and debate opportunities that we have.
And I mean, for our listeners abroad, they may not understand what it means to host a national tournament in America. It's literally a week long, and it can involve 7,000 people. So there are a number of sites. Can you talk a minute about what a challenge is?
Yes, I think it's the largest academic competition in the world, with students from all 50 states, a number of U.S. territories, and then even some international countries come as well. We have 110 competitive districts in the nation, all sending their top students to the competition. It's literally a seven-day event when you add in registration and departure time, with 5 days of competition, hundreds and hundreds of competition spaces, I guess into the thousands of competition spaces, with all the different events, ultimately awarding national championships in over 20 events. We also add the middle school and junior high students as well at the same location. And that's actually a refreshing opportunity to see hundreds of the smaller competitors running around enjoying the activity as well. But in planning to host a national tournament, you have everything from thinking about their food and their lodging needs to the competitive opportunities to sightseeing, etc. So it is quite a vast undertaking.
So why would you want to do it more than once?
That is such a good question, and at about a week before each time, I ask myself that. personally, I'm a problem solver. I like to solve problems. So when I think about troubleshooting and planning, that's something that's very appealing to me. But I guess the real reason I do it is this activity has given me my voice in life. It really has. It's empowered me, and the opportunity to provide those activities to young people to equip them is something that means a great deal to me. So that's my personal motivation.
So, Cindy, I want to ask you, why are you interested in this particular debate format?
I think there are several reasons why the World Schools format is particularly interesting to me. First of all, at least in the United States, a number of our other debate formats have become less communicative over the years. And I think this format is the most attractive to me at this time in my career and my life because it's all about communication. And it's about communication in two ways. It's about communicating to real people, the average citizen, just the person who wants to talk about the issues of the day. And it's also communicative because it's about real issues that impact us, both here and, of course, abroad. And I think that when you have the opportunity to talk about things beyond our borders, that provides a lot of education and also enlarges the chance for American students to become global citizens. So I would say that's the first thing that attracts me to it. A second thing, I think, is that the times of the speeches are long enough to actually develop arguments. Several of the American formats have shorter time frames, which means that you can get the claim of an argument out, but you don't really have time to develop it substantively. With 8-minute constructive speeches, of course, an hour-long debate format, as World Schools offers, you have the opportunity to fully flesh out ideas, and I find that enormously appealing as an educator. I think the third thing that I find the most compelling about the format is the, I think, appropriate use of research and evidence. In other words, some debate formats have become so evidence intensive that you actually use the reason, you lose the reasoning, the logic, the communication that needs to go with the evidence. In World School, there is evidence that's used, but it's used in such a way that it becomes, again, very appealing to just the smart person in your living room who can wants to talk about real ideas. And I also find that the appropriate use of what I kind of call just layperson evidence makes it approachable and also is not a cost barrier for students with less economic advantage to access. In other words, everyone can access the kind of information that's used in these debate rounds. So those are the main reasons that I find the format so attractive.
This is a question that a lot of American students and American teachers are going to be asking themselves. I'm already doing some other format of debate and speech. Why should I switch? I know you just gave some reasons for you, but what would you tell them about why they should try this format?
Let me talk about in the classroom and then out of the classroom. First of all, just as a classroom teacher, this format offers a way to get full debates within a typical one-hour class setting involving more of your students. As a competitive event, it's 3 students versus 3. So you can imagine as a teacher then you're getting 6 students to debate at one time, which allows you within the course of a week potentially to get 30 students involved in debating. That's hard to do in the other formats. If you add 2 more speakers to take the each of the 2 reply speeches, then you potentially could have 8 students going through a debate at one time. So from classroom education purposes, it really makes teaching debate skills accessible in an hour-long debate class period. Additionally, because it is communicative in terms of the verbal delivery or the oral communication of the activity, anybody can watch this. And that allows you to have in-school debates, public debates. It allows you to invite parents in. It allows you to invite administrators in, which I think then makes your program more relevant. And when we make our programs relevant, we get support and we can get the funding that we need for our programs overall. So I see it as imperative as a debate educator that we look for those formats which may not replace other formats in our program, but which allow us to reach out to the community and particularly show our administrators and board members and community members what we're really about.
And I think one of the things we've discovered with USA Debate is it's fun.
Yes, it is very fun. The children really like, I've used this format when I've done my after-school program for third graders. They literally can adapt the format, although I've made the speeches shorter. Middle school kids love the points of information. They absolutely love jumping in with that particular kind of thing. They just find it if you walk by a room and a World School Format debate is going on, people will come in. They find it attractive. If you walk by a room where some of the other American formats are going on, people look in, make a face, and walk away. And I think we really need to think about that if we're trying to advocate for the longevity of our activity.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're the team manager for USA Debate, and we have a big country, and right now we have 9 students on our team. Can you tell us a little bit about the job you face as team manager?
It's very interesting, and it's challenging, especially when I talk to some of my peers who do the same thing around the world. For example, the current world champions are from Singapore, and they have very talented students, obviously. But they also have, Singapore is a pretty small place by comparison. So for the opportunity for them to see each other on a regular basis and in terms of traveling, certainly there are different logistics involved. I just made travel arrangements for our first training opportunity for the new 9 members of the USA Debate team. We have 4 time zones, 6 nations, 6 states, 8 cities, and it gets really complicated. 4 different airlines just to get to one place to have common training. When you add those time zones, it's something that we were learning in our first 2 years, that the students from the West Coast and the East Coast converging in the center somewhere are either really awake or really sleepy in terms of how their bodies are adapting to that. So that becomes a challenge. When we do online training, we have to start at 6 p.m. on one place, you know, which is 10 p.m. on the other side of the country. So that requires some unique barriers. But it also gives us enormous opportunities. The United States is a very diverse country. And with the support of the National Association, we have been able to choose team members, very talented team members from across the country that really reflect the diversity of our country. And as a team manager, that becomes an honor then to show the rest of the world as we travel the diversity that we do represent, ethnically, racially, and belief systems and backgrounds and economic circumstances, et cetera. We've got a little bit of everything on our team, and that makes it really exciting. There's also the challenge involved in when you add up all the time that we're together during the course of a year, it's less than a month. And so to have students from across the country come together and bond as a team while still competing for 5 slots ultimately to go to the World Championship is also a challenge for us to face. Making them feel comfortable enough, challenge them to compete, requires a lot of finesse, I think, on our part. Another challenge is that each of these students in their own schools is typically the best or most successful debater at that school. They now come together with 8 other colleagues who are also the best at their respective schools. So no longer are they necessarily the leader or the most talented. That creates interesting things for those students to experience and reflect on. So it's rewarding. It is also challenging.
Yep. Well, it sounds like you're not afraid of challenges with the largest academic competition in the world and one of the most complex teams to try to manage and direct. And I just wanted to personally thank you for all the hard work you do.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. It's an honor to work with it, and I enjoy the people that I get to work with. And thank you for all that you've done to not only bring this format to our country, but the work that you do around the world to share debate and civil discourse with citizens all over.
What are some of the hopes you have for this debate format in the USA? Where do you think it's going? Is it going to grow? Is it going to...
I very much hope that it grows, and I believe it will. I think that this format offers things that some debate coaches didn't even really... weren't even aware of that we needed. But as people become aware of it, people become very excited. For example, in the first full year of having the United States team operated by the association, we hosted the largest ever event of this format that had ever been seen in the world. And that was at our national tournament this past June in December. I believe it will explode within a three-year period and just take off. I think the sky's the limit. I think as I talk to teachers and coaches from around the country, they're very excited about it. The only limit is what we're facing just in the early days of adoption of any new format is tournaments being willing to host a division of the event. The divisions are going to be small the first couple of years as students learn to embrace it, as coaches learn to teach it. And once that starts happening and there are more opportunities for students to go to, then it will naturally grow on its own. But we're in that time period where tournaments are beginning to offer it and students are beginning to compete and coaches are beginning to embrace the format. So I see a very bright future for World School Debate in the United States.
Now, in June at the National Speech and Debate Association National Championship, that biggest academic competition in the world you talked about, it's going to be in Salt Lake City, right?
Yes, sir.
And we're going to have the U.S. World Schools Debate Invitational. Now, I hope that a lot of our colleagues from other countries are listening. Could you talk to them about why they might consider attending that event?
Well, I think that while the United States has a long history of, with our association, of conducting just a stellar national tournament, our organization is over 90 years old now. And with the expertise that we have in running these events, I think individuals from other countries would really enjoy a very well-run, well-hosted event. There will be no organizational snafus to deal with. It's just a well-oiled machine, and I think they would appreciate that. I think also other countries coming to the event will have the opportunity to see truly students from, again, every state in the country. And that is something that when you consider the size of our country, third largest geographically, third largest in terms of population, offers diversity that you might see on an entire continent. For example, Europe, you can see that kind of diversity just from border to border of our country. And so I think they would enjoy that. I do also believe that many of the people who've been participating in this format in other parts of the world would find it energizing to see an entire country's national commitment to embracing the format. I think they would appreciate that. And also, if you come from another country, we want to learn from you. We will create opportunities for your coaches and judges from other countries to share with our coaches and judges. We know that we have a lot to learn. We are not arrogant about working with this format. We want to embrace what you have to share with us as well and engage in letting our students interact with your students as well. So I think it's a wonderful opportunity in many different levels.
Well, Cindy Timmons from Texas, thank you very much for being our guest today on the World Schools Debate Podcast, and I hope that you'll come back again soon, and we'll see how things are going.
Thank you very much. All right. Bye-bye.
Nicholas Angelopoulos, you're out there on the West Coast. Hello this evening. How you doing?
Hello, brother. How you doing?
I'm doing really well. It's been such a pleasure to work with you on the USA team.
And same here.
Right.
Same here.
We've been together for a while on this journey. You've been to two World Schools Debating Championship tournaments so far. So what do you think?
Well, those tournaments are incredibly, incredibly difficult, incredibly rewarding. The world championship that I went to my sophomore year was in Thailand. That was really surreal, both as a cultural experience and as a debating experience. Culturally, we got to see such incredible stuff in Thailand, from like these gold temples that were just covered in these ornate masterpieces, Buddhist masterpieces made of gold, to, you know, a college town university in Thailand. And it's incredible to see kind of both like the face of economic inequality in Southeast Asia and also the cultural richness of Thailand, which I find to be one of the most culturally engaging places in the world. In terms of the competition, it's, in my experience, the most difficult competition that one can experience, even with the team of, you know, Nikki Halterman, LD champion, Jasper Primack, genius. It's like everyone has to work hard. Our coaches are incredible. We work until, you know, 2 a.m. and love every second. And I'm really grateful that I've had the opportunity to go to these championships. And thank you for coming with me, Tuna. You rock, man.
Hey, it's been a great journey together. I appreciate it, my brother. Yeah. One of the things you have to do is you spend your life, and I mean, you've had some international experience, but you spend your debating life mostly trying to persuade American judges. Now, all of a sudden, there are no American judges. What's that challenge like?
Well, it's actually one of the most challenging parts about World Schools is convincing these non-American judges. And on a superficial level, there are differences that make it difficult to reach out but can be easily resolved, right? So they flow differently. They don't do line-by-line flowing internationally. They flag arguments differently. So the phrases that the judges key into so that they write down arguments are different. And moreover, the argument structure that they're used to is different. They're used to almost like a formal logical proof told as a story and then with supplementary evidence rather than just cards. But there's some other parts of it that I find significantly more engaging in terms of reaching out to these international judges that make you like grow as a human being and as a debater, rather than just being like differences in format. So first of all, of course, the big one is that it's an international format and you can't be Eurocentric or US-centric inside your advocacy. But moreover, it's a political format, not a legalistic format. So all of your arguments have to do with advocacy. You have to be fighting for a person, and you have to have a razor-sharp focus on the constituency that you choose to represent and route. And so judges really value having proportional and realistic impacts because it makes you a genuine debater. And you have to have sort of perfect philosophical consistency down the line of all four speeches in an evolving debate against your opponents. And your judges perceive conceptual or philosophical contradictions as like not being genuine towards the people that you're trying to represent. So you have to be abundantly clear that you fight for somebody. And that's how you win internationally. And I think that's actually really beautiful about the format.
I think you as the debater have done a really good job of putting a face on it.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
You know, and I mean, Bob Marley said, who feels it knows it.
Oh.
And when you make the judge feel it, then they know it. And that's different than someone who's just judging debate as, well, we have another tournament and another contest and another. And I think it's a great way to prepare for what's going to happen in the most important debate of all, the one that's going to happen in real life.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I feel like this format's all about.
Okay. What's your favorite memory, either abroad or in the USA, from your involvement with USA Debate?
Yeah, totally. There are so many that I'm thinking of, but the one that I love most is the Night Zoo in Singapore. Mm-hmm. So when we went to Singapore, the organizers of the tournament, this is the World Championship in Singapore, had all of the debaters go to a few different cultural centers in Singapore. And my favorite one was the Night Zoo, where the zoo opened at, what, like 8 o'clock, and they showed only nocturnal animals. And so Team USA, along with the other 60 teams at the tournament, were walking around this night zoo looking at night animals together and all talking about how cute the animals were. And I can remember this one moment where Team USA, and I think it was like Team Romania, are walking up and talking, and we see these little otters, and the otters are sleeping. And then when we come by the enclosure, they wake up and they go, and then they run at us and start like screaming at us and doing tricks and playing with each other. And it was really fun. And we, you know, it was camaraderie among different cultures. It was a really fun experience.
And different species.
Different species. Yeah. Different species cooperation. Yeah. Exactly. I loved it.
All right.
I, that's probably not like the debater thing to say, but uh-huh. It's true.
How about that debate in Europe about transgendered people? That was pretty meaningful, where you talked about you have to look those transgendered people in the eye and tell them we're not going to help you.
Go
ahead.
I mean, so the situation is another team at the tournament. We made an argument about like transgendered people's rights, and they were like, transgender people are a minority of the population. They don't even matter anyway. If they want to, you know, have rights, they should come to our country in Europe because we're progressive, unlike the United States. Right? And so when people make those types of like those offensive conjectures, it's, I think, important to remind the judges that it is in fact real people, right? It is in fact not just a debate round that you're talking about. And if it is, it's all meaningless. But they know it too. The judges know that, you know, people have emotions and feelings and that people matter. And sometimes all you need to do is remind them of that, and then they'll know what the right decision is. And so it's who feels it knows it. You have to make the judge feel it in their hearts. And that's really important to me and to the format.
So if you were an American doing another debate format, you're going to tournaments, you're winning awards, why would you want to try the World Schools debate format?
Oh, wow. I think that World Schools is incredibly unique for two reasons. First of all, it has a really low bar for entry and a really high bar for how great you can be at it. So it doesn't take all that much training to give a World School speech, because all it is like common sense, good argumentation. But the heights that you can reach with it are like astronomical. It's about advocacy. It's about fighting for real people. And so if you want to learn how to fight for real people, which is like the only debate that matters, then that's what this format is all about. It's about fighting for somebody. And so when I say you have to have a razor sharp focus on the constituency that you choose to represent, that means that in life you're going to be able to do that. And having proportional and realistic impacts means that, you know, you're keyed in to the struggles of real people. And so World Schools debate is incredible for that, because you spend most of the debate, significantly more so than in other formats, debating about like the nuances of internal links inside arguments. And although that like is not that, like in jargon that sounds like not very good, in practice that means that you're talking about like what are actual people going to do. And it's not about like, oh, is this going to result in nuclear war, or, you know, complicated theory about, you know, like ontology, which you can run in World Schools if it matters, but it's nothing is fatuous, nothing is procedural, it's all purely nuanced argumentation about what really matters in the world. And I mean in the world, not just the United States. And I love that about World Schools. And if you want to do that, you should do World Schools too.
Okay, great. Well, I think World Schools is going to grow really rapidly in the United States, and I think that's good, because we're all going to be global citizens, and we need to start solving problems and addressing issues on a global basis. Nicholas Angelopoulos, thanks a lot for being with us this evening. And, hey, will you come back again some week?
Absolutely, man. Love you, brother.
All right. Peace out.
Yeah, peace.
Finally, in this week's podcast, we're going to talk to Steve Yano. Dr. Steve Yano is a professor at St. John's University who has a lot of experience both in podcasts and in World Schools. Well, I'm here today with Steve Yano of St. John's University in New York City. Thanks a lot for joining us, Steve.
Hey, it's my pleasure, Tuna. Good to be on the show.
Yeah, I guess I'll have to explain to people later why I'm called Tuna, but...
Oh, yeah. I guess I should call you Dr. Snyder. Is that correct?
You know, just don't call me late for dinner.
Yeah, me either.
Steve, as you know, this is a podcast about World Schools Debate. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience with World Schools Debate?
Yeah, my experience with World Schools Debate is I'd heard whispers of sort of a high school Worlds format. I first got exposed to the Worlds format and the World Schools format through working with you. Mm. And the World Universities format I first saw in 2004, and I saw it in Slovenia, and I thought, boy, this is strange. And now I end up teaching it all the time, and I really think it's great, and I love it. And then a few years ago, we went to Washington, D.C. for the World Schools Debate Championship, and I saw it there, and I thought, boy, this is strange, and I like it now, too. That's my experience with it. I've judged it a bunch. I've seen it a bunch since then. I think it's a really interesting format.
And you've been very active in helping the Houston Urban Debate League get going, teaching at their workshop.
Yeah, that's right. There's a teacher, Teach for America teacher, Mandy Frank, who they contacted and said, you know, we want to do this World Schools Debate format. I think they got it from going to Europe to one of your workshops and saw it, or some of the board members did. I don't really know the exact story. And then they invited me down to teach it, and they had sort of an introductory year for it. And most of the teachers that I talked to in Houston who were with the Urban Debate League were very skeptical of it, very skeptical. And we had numerous lunches and dinners where we talked about it. It wasn't an aggression or a hostility. It was just, we're not sure this is going to teach good things to our students compared to the debate formats we already have. And we talked about it, and they seemed willing to try. And then the next year I came back, and they all said that it was an educational grand slam for them. That they now just taught debate courses all day, that demand was incredibly high, that students were learning and engaging with their peers and with other teachers in a critical way. So it was really something that went well above and beyond their expectations for what they thought a debate format could do educationally. So it's great, and they still do it, and they love it, and it's very popular down in Houston.
Yeah, a couple of Houston teachers have talked to me about the fact that it's radically improved the students' writing.
Oh, wow. See, that's a good connection.
Yeah. And the Houston Urban Debate League doubled the number of students in the league after they introduced World Schools.
Yeah, it's insanely popular. Insanely popular. Like I think we had at least 50 students this last summer. I don't remember off the top of my head, but it was pretty good for a camp that was very short and has limited resources. I think it was very, very good to have that number of students very interested. And all of them were amazing. They had already had good – the ones that I worked with had already had very good instruction from the high schools. Mm-hmm. I was blown away with how thoughtful they were and skilled they were at putting arguments together. It was great to work with them.
Mm-hmm. Steve, you are a debate educator, and you're often critical of what we do and how useful it is, which I kind of find refreshing.
No, thanks.
And I don't always agree with you, but hey, that's why we call it debate, right?
Yeah, right. As you've often said, it's not agree.
It's not agree, it's debate. So why do you think that World Schools is a worthwhile debate format for young people?
Gosh, well, one of the things I really like about it is the element of pre-prepared motions that don't expect you to be some kind of incredible collegiate level scholar to participate in. And you research the motion, and you research it well, and you work together to put a case together for either side of it. And I think that's really, really valuable, because the research projects that students often get in high school in the United States are just not really up to date. English teachers are assigning things like you have to have 4 or 5 books and then maybe 3 articles and then like a couple of online sources. And, you know, online sources, I'm not really sure what that means, but a lot of my students who come to university think anything that's on a computer is a bad source. I mean, it's not the case. A lot of these things are coming from the same kind of journalistic and editorial standards that produce a book. And a lot of books are electronic now, too. So it forces you with these topics to come up with what, from the high school perspective, and curriculum often lags behind what's going on in the world for many reasons. It forces student staff to encounter, hey, these are very difficult research questions. This is cutting-edge stuff. Where can I go to find out about this? And they find new resources that they bring into the classroom, and then that educates both the teacher and the other students. Say, oh, I read it on this, I read it on that. And it's not just a website or a blog, which most teachers think is what the Internet consists of, unfortunately.
Okay, so you you understand, of course, that then half the motions are impromptu motions.
That's right. Where
the students are put together in a room all by themselves for 60 minutes to prepare and build a case. You think that's useful?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. One of the things I really like about World Schools is that when it's done well, those impromptu motions are tangential to the prepared motions. Sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're just way out there. But that's good, too, because what happens is you get this sort of effect, this sort of, I guess it's like a research aura, to where when you're researching things, you're also reading things to figure out if they're relevant. And sometimes they're not. And you're like, oh, that's not really relevant to the case I want to build. And you toss it aside, but your mind doesn't toss it aside. You're collecting things all the time. I used to call it sort of the shelf position effect. When you went to the library to get a physical book, it was always the book two or three down that was much more interesting. So you'd pull that one too, and then you pull that one too. And this is what happens when you go to the library, like a big library, and you're looking for that one book. You're like, hey, all these other things on the shelf are also cool. They didn't come up in my search, but I'm going to take them now. It's the same thing with searching online for things or searching in a database for stuff. You always hit things and you look at them and you're like, well, that's not really what I want to do. I had to look at it, though, to determine that. And those things become useful. And it shows students that everything they're encountering is potentially educational curriculum. Everything they're encountering is potentially educational. And it's sort of a more broadband approach to research and education rather than narrowband, which is go find this one book, get the quotes out of it, do the test. That's sort of an older model of education. And in the contemporary world, we need this sort of broadband education, which I think the World Schools Impromptu is exactly what it is, which is here's a question that you have to be very quickly prepared to debate for. It's not some random thing you're not an expert in. It has all these elements of things you've looked at, but how can you work with others to come up with some really good ideas based on some things you know that can then help you make the best case possible? That's something that everyone's called upon to do in their work all the time. Like your boss's boss is coming into town and your boss says, hey, present a real quick thing in 20 minutes about what you guys are doing in your division. You know, you need to be able to do that.
Yeah, you do. There are a couple of other differences, too. I think that in World Schools Debate, there's no card reading.
That's right. Yep.
And it's pretty much de-jargonized. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that?
I'm a big fan of it. You know, right now in policy debate circles, something I'm critical of is policy debate. A number of people in policy debate trying to defend the card reading by saying their debate is evidence-based debate, to which I say, point out a kind of debate that's not evidence-based. Preference for a particular kind of evidence is not all evidence. The conception of cards outstrips the conception of evidence in the debate and argumentation literature. And in the legal literature, and in the sociology literature. In fact, pick anything that's evidence-based, social work, medicine, law. Their conception of evidence is always changing and is very amorphous and large, because it has to be, because what is presented as evidence is always changing. Cards are sort of a narrow-band conception of evidence. And although I think it's pedagogically valuable to make these smaller sort of models to show students this is the way it is, you can do that in World Schools as a starter. But the way that they use the evidence is much more integrated, like they would in a paper or like they would in a college essay. What they have to do once they come to the university and produce an essay, they'll be asked to provide a much more fluid use of evidence, which is the way we use it in conversation, which will be like, you know, I heard on NPR that this and this statistic about Donald Trump voters. And that's the way it would be done in a conversation. Cards are useful for separating as a pedagogical device at the most basic level. Information that's not you from your statement. But that's something that I think is only useful in the beginning. And then the way World Schools does it, I think, is brilliant, which is, you know, you cite these things and you talk about these things as if you're immersed in the conversation with the experts and not just drawing on them like a resource. So I think it's great. It's a model that's much more in line with the way evidence is used in more fields and in scholarship. And that's what I think we should be teaching. Like, why make a divide?
Now, the model is supposed to be that the debate is for the intelligent, informed citizen, which means you can't use a bunch of debate jargon that only debate experts know.
Right.
And you know, I find a lot of the argumentative concepts behind jargon good. Mm-hmm. But you can teach the concept without having to rely on the jargon.
That's right. Yeah, I totally agree with you. And jargon is also a shorthand for a closed community. So think about the practice of law. There's a lot of incredibly complicated, long legal procedure that if you had to say every single time you wanted something to happen in the court, that would slow the court system down to where it would be unusable. Think about the United States Congress or any parliamentary system of government. There are all kinds of things that are set in tradition or law or regulation that if you had to say them out, you ruin the amount of time for real debate on real issues, the critical timeliness of it that has to be dealt with. That shorthand helps them get things done. But remember, those are closed systems. In the debate that people have in democracies, that's an open system. And what you need to be able to do is explain. What you need to be able to do is not exclude. Like, imagine a democratic conversation where people are using their own code words. You wouldn't really feel welcome. Even if your ideas were great and useful to those people for their thinking, even if it was on their side, you really wouldn't be welcome or be able to participate in that because you'd say, well, I don't know these code words. And they might laugh at you for not knowing them. And that's not really a good model for democratic decision making.
Okay, podcast.
It's full. Yeah.
Podcast. As you know, and I confessed with you some time ago, I didn't think podcasts were going anywhere.
Yeah.
Now they have become incredibly popular, and here I am doing one. How do you think students and teachers can use a podcast like the World Schools podcast?
Oh, man. Well, the first and most pragmatic is podcasts are evidence. They're amazing research tools. As long as there'll be commutes, that's like dead time, like commercial radio is taken over by horrible three-minute pop songs. So why not listen to a podcast on your commute, pick something up, you might be able to use it. But I think as an educational device, we need to think about podcasting as the new essay, the new research report. What would be different about writing a paper and doing a podcast? Well, there's differences in the medium, and there's different rules, but there are rules, and there are those rules are based on effectiveness. So when someone teaches the five-paragraph research essay in a high school classroom, they're teaching a particular set of rules and standards and maybe even some cultural differences in communication. A podcast does the same things, but for a different audience.
Okay.
And I think it might be something worth exploring as an alternative for students and teachers as an assignment, or even as something like, hey, here's what we're doing in our class. Here's what we're studying. Here's why it's relevant. Bringing the community and other interested people into the school in a virtual way, in a safe virtual way, to where they can say, oh, now I really know what's going on at that high school down the street because I can listen to this cool podcast the students do. I mean, the possibilities are endless. And, of course, obviously, podcasting seems like a cool idea.
And it's cheap.
Yeah, it's very inexpensive. I'm sure most teachers listening to this have the equipment they need in their school or even in their classroom. Mm.
Steve, you do a podcast for the World University's debate format. Tell us a little about it.
Yeah, my podcast is called In the Bin.
What does that mean?
In the bin means that you are in a bad debate. You're in what's perceived. Let me clarify. You're in what's perceived a bad debate in the rubbish bin, as the British would say, a trash debate where no one's very good and all that sort of stuff. And I came up with the name because I wanted to kind of play with that conception. Like, what is a bad debate? Who gets to determine that? A lot of times it's predetermined just by looking at the schools on the pairing. It's kind of nonsense, right? Because anything can happen in a debate. And if you're judging a debate, what kind of judge are you going to be if you go in thinking, well, this debate's rubbish? Kind of nonsense. But I came up with the idea with George Fitzpatrick, who is a debater at St. John's. We came up with the idea of, like, wouldn't it be nice to do a podcast where we talk about these issues that we rush around at tournaments? Everyone kind of wants to talk about these ideas, like what we're talking about now, Tuna, you and me. At a tournament, we're rushed for time. Maybe you and I could have a five-minute conversation, but then we have to be off to our debates to judge them. We have to be off to take care of our students. We have to go back to the hotel. There's not enough time for that kind of high-level discussion. So that's why I started the podcast. And In the Bin's available at sophist.nyc/inthebin. You can listen to it right there.
SOPHIST.NYC /inthebin.
In the bin, all one word.
Okay, encourage people to look at it. Steve, thank you for coming on and chatting with us. I'm going to ask you to come back sometime later and visit with us. Steve Yano from St. John's University in New York City. Thanks, buddy, and have a great week.
Thanks, Professor Snyder. I'd love to come back anytime.
All right. Well, we made it through the first episode of the World Schools podcast. We had some microphone challenges, some police siren challenges, et cetera, but we overcame all of those things, and we can only look to things getting better in the future. Every week, we're going to try to provide a level of instruction about debating the format, as well as discussion about the issues related to it, tournament opportunities, and talk to some pretty interesting people. Well, thank you for listening to the World Schools podcast this week. Please join us again. This podcast is a production of the USA's National Speech and Debate Association and the World Debate Institute at the University of Vermont. Find out about the National Speech and Debate Association at their website, which is speechanddebate.org. Find out about the World Debate Institute at our website, debate.uvm.edu. Until we meet again, this is Alfred Snyder saying keep on debating and think for yourself.